Are Christians science deniers? That's a question that J. Warner Wallace asks. J. Warner Wallace is a Christian apologist. He is a Dateline-featured cold case detective. He's a senior fellow at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. He's also a professor of Biola part-time and also an author of a few different books, including Cold Case Christianity. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And J. Warner Wallace, it's great to have you back on the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Jerry. I appreciate it.
Sure. And listen, for those who might have missed the earlier part about your story, can you just really briefly summarize your Christian testimony, how you came to Christ from your background as a detective?
Well, I was somebody who wasn't raised in the church, and so for me, I had to kind of come at it a different way. I didn't have any Christians in my life. I was working as an investigator, though. And when this person of Jesus of Nazareth was first presented to me, I just decided to take a look at him evidentially. Just what can we know about him from the Gospels? Why would we ever trust the Gospels? Those kinds of issues were the primary issues for me. And so I just treated it like I would any cold case, and I examined the Gospels as eyewitness testimony. Number one, is it really eyewitness testimony? And if it is, could you examine it in such a way to determine if it's reliable? And that's really how I became a Christian.
Huh. That's so interesting. Your brand of cold case cases that you worked on and so forth, you were very much involved in reading transcripts and dealing with interviews as opposed to, let's say, forensics. That kind of stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes there are forensic elements of every case, right? But those were not usually the tail that wagged the dog for me in these kinds of cases, because they were cold for a reason. They were cold because they were pretty crummy to begin with. And sometimes we had, you know, the only documents we had on some of these from a 35-year-ago case was you had an eyewitness back then who's no longer available to you because they've passed away.
Yeah.
And even the person who wrote the report, maybe 35 years ago, that first detective is no longer available to you. So now you're really kind of stuck trying to figure out, is any of this true, given that I cannot go back and re-interview the people who were involved, and I can't even go back and re-interview the person who took the interview? Well, that's pretty much what you're looking at with the Gospels, right? You have an event in the distant past, and you've got somebody who allegedly says they saw it, someone like John or Matthew, and then you've got somebody, you know, who wrote it, maybe someone like a Luke or a Mark. You don't have access to any of those people. And even though Luke tells you he's talking to eyewitnesses, you have no access to the eyewitnesses or to Luke. You've got to figure out forensically if this document is telling you something true.
Huh, that's so interesting. I love that testimony. And by the way, how many years ago was it that you were converted to Jesus about?
Well, I'm 57 now. I was 35 when I became a Christian.
Oh, okay. So about 20 years ago. Okay. All right. Yeah. So let's look at this question that you raised in one of your Colson Center articles. The question raised was, are Christians science deniers? Okay, go ahead and unpack that for us.
Well, I think that's a question that's often leveled at us, right? That we don't, because the secular world would say, well, gosh, if you were somebody who trusted science, you would believe in a kind of a naturalistic system of evolutionary processes that delivers us to this position. You wouldn't, for example, believe that there's a need for a creator, right? If you're somebody who trusts the science to give you answers, you know, how could you even examine your worldview as a Christian from a scientific perspective? I mean, there's lots of ways that this accusation comes at us, right? Either that we do not embrace certain views that other people in the scientific community embrace, or that we don't really apply the sciences perhaps to our worldview. There's lots of ways that this is kind of leveled at us. And I think I get it, you know, but as you and I both know, there's lots of folks who are in the church who maybe aren't really even prepared to answer that kind of objection. And I think we need to be able to prepare to answer that objection, because our young people are hearing it all the time. And one of the most popular reasons or barriers to faith that are listed by young people is that they do not believe that the Christian worldview can be reconciled with a scientific worldview. They think that science and faith are deeply divided, and they cannot be reconciled. And given that, they are, for the most part, by the time they're done with, you know, reading the internet and going to school and going to college, they pick one of those two worldviews. It's usually the scientific one. So we have to kind of, I think, be able to help young people, in the church at least, understand that these two things are not opposed. You can be somebody who's, there are amazing scientists that are Christians, even today, in the world, who are writing and are very active in their disciplines, and are very influential in their disciplines, you do not have to reject a scientific approach in order to become a Christian.
Okay, we have 9 minutes. Let's go ahead and why don't you just give us some, you know, ready-made answers for this kind of objection. And by the way, isn't it true that ultimately Christianity gave birth to science?
Yeah, let me give you a couple of ways that you could probably respond. I think first we would say that Christianity is not by its very nature anti-science, but it is anti-scientism. And when I say scientism, what I mean is the belief that science is really the only way you could ever know anything. In other words, that if you can't prove it with science, I'm not going to accept it. But there are a ton of things that you know and accept without the benefit of a scientific process or science at all. For example, there are logic facts, there are logical positions and attributes that you, mathematical truths, for example, all of these, how you use logic, the law of non-contradiction, for example, and mathematical truths are things that precede scientific investigations. You assume them first. You don't try to prove them with science. You assume these truths in order to do science. In addition, there are lots of metaphysical truths, right? These are the things that determine, for example, the truths that determine whether the external world is real. Or these are things that you have to accept on their face. You cannot do these scientifically. There are even historical truths that you're not going to be able to test scientifically. I think Christians believe that science can tell us a lot of important things. We simply don't believe it can tell us all important things. And so, you know, science can tell you what is, for example, but it cannot tell you what ought to be. There's an is-ought dichotomy here. How could science possibly tell us anything meaningful, for example, about the history of Jesus or the historical reliability of the Bible? That approach is going to have to be evidential, but it won't be a series of scientific experiments we're going to run. So I would say, yes, we are against this idea that the only things that are true about the universe are entirely physical. We believe in non-physical realities, but we aren't against the science that might discover those things. If I've got a few more seconds here,
sure.
I would say this, that science and Christianity are, because we understand this difference, we're not at odds with one another. In fact, I think science can help us make a case for the God of the Bible. Let me tell you why. Science tells us that everything in the universe came into existence from nothing. This Big Bang cosmology, this standard cosmological model. As an atheist, I believe that. And I believe that there was something outside of space, time, and matter that was the cause of everything that is spatial, temporal, or material. And that is what many secular scientists believe. There's something outside of the universe that is the first cause of all space, time, and matter. Well, what does that sound like, even from our perspective? If it cannot be spatial, temporal, or material, yet it has to be a powerful first cause, what could that be? And even science even tells us that the DNA in our genetic information in our body, that is information in DNA. And if it's information, the best inference for information is always intelligence. There's not a single example anywhere in the history of science in which information has come from anything other than intelligence. So if you've got a science pointing to a non-spatial, non-temporal, non-material first cause that is intelligent so it can provide information in DNA, do you see how the science could actually point toward what we would call God, right? Because those are the attributes of God. So in some ways I would say, no, we're not at odds with one another. In fact, I think we can use the science to develop the best and most reasonable inference of God's existence.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So two different verses, Genesis 1:1 and John 1:1, but they seem to have scientific implications to them, don't they?
Absolutely. Isn't it funny that the Christian worldview seems to describe the world the way it really is, and it did that long before we had scientific endeavors that confirmed those truths?
Now, as I heard you talking about science and skepticism and so forth, I couldn't help but think of the story in John's Gospel, the account of Thomas, the doubter.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that a little bit in terms of the scientific method and stuff?
Yeah, and Thomas touches, you know, he's the one who says, I will not believe this resurrection has occurred. I will not believe that Jesus is alive unless I can put my fingers in the wounds. And so I can, and I don't think that Jesus is really scolding him. You can read that passage how you might. I think that Jesus embraces that and actually appears to Thomas and asks him to put his fingers in. And right away, Thomas is a believer. And he tells Thomas, hey, blessed are those who did not see this yet believe. And what he's not saying there, Jesus is not saying that those who have no basis on which to believe this are more blessed than you who does have a basis on which to believe this, because in the very next lines, Jesus further provides them proofs of his resurrection, which you wouldn't have to do if you thought that having no proof makes you more blessed. What he was saying to Thomas is, they are blessed because they will have the account that you will give them. You will be my eyewitnesses. That's called direct evidence in a criminal trial. And because Jesus depended on the direct evidence of the disciples, he called those who would hear the direct evidence and believe it blessed. And that makes sense. That's what we do in all criminal trials. Those who hear and believe and render a verdict are in some ways blessed in the sense that they now know the truth. And that's what we're talking about in that passage.
What would you say to somebody who says, well, evolution proves that there is no God and evolution is a fact?
Well, I would say whether evolution is true or not is different than saying evolution is a fact. I mean, I'm not even going to talk about usually with people who are skeptics. I won't go into the issues of whether it's true or not until I first resolve, is it a fact? No, it's not a fact. It's an inference from facts. It may be a true inference from facts, but the facts are the scientific data upon which you infer that evolution is either true or that it's not true. And it turns out that I am somebody who believes there's an intelligent designer, and the facts that I'm using to infer that conclusion are the exact same facts that my friends who believe in evolution are using to infer evolution. Well, how can that be? Because there's a difference between facts and inferences. All juries know this. I mean, the defense is saying, hey, same facts that they presented on the prosecution side, we just believe they tell us something different. So in the end, we're using the same facts, the same science. That's why science can help us. The question is, what do we properly infer? Is it a matter of common descent, or is it a matter of common designer? Both could be true. The question is, which is the better inference from the facts? And I think the better inference for me is that we have a common designer, which is the source of all the features and appearances of design we see both in the universe and in biology.
You know, there's the older I get, the more wisdom I see in the one of the lines from Simon and Garfunkel. A man, he hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. La, 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 la. But I mean, there's so much truth to that, though, that people sometimes reject the truth of Christianity, not because of the facts or whatever, but because of feelings, and they don't want to be confused with the facts, essentially.
Well, yeah, that's very true. And I'm always hesitant to kind of camp on that, because I know that as an atheist, I would not want to be told that you think I don't believe this because I have some kind of an emotional or willful problem. But let's just be honest. When we pick juries, we know that the things that might persuade them toward a particular inference are more than just the facts. There is a reason to reject the claim. It could be intellectual, which means it could just be that it's rational. They don't believe there's enough evidence for this. But there's also emotional resistance to any kind of truth claims, and there's also volitional resistance. So if you're somebody, for example, on the jury who shares the same, I don't know, you both were born in the same city as the defendant, and you just believe that no one born in your city could ever do such a thing, and you refuse to believe that anyone born in that city could commit that kind of crime, then it doesn't matter what I show you, that presupposition you hold,
yep,
which is a volitional resistance, you just don't want to believe it's true, well, that's going to rule the day. And that's why we have jury selection processes, is to help get those kinds of candidates off the table, right? We want to make sure that we don't have people who are unable to set aside their presuppositions in order to render a verdict. So we do have to look at that, right? This is what you said is very true.
Well, we're basically out of time, unless there's a 20-second closer you want to give us. ColdCaseChristianity.com, J. Warner Wallace. 20 seconds?
Yeah, I can tell you that just don't be afraid to engage the scientific data. Remember, the science doesn't tell you things. Scientists do. Don't be skeptical of the science. Be skeptical of scientists who may try to infer improperly from the science.
Excellent. J. Warner Wallace, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jerry. Appreciate
it. Okay, great. Thanks. Bye-bye.